All right. I want to welcome you into episode number 6 of College Football Weekly. I'm your host, Aaron Jones. July 4th, 2011. Yes, my second podcast of the day. I guess I'm just in the college football type of mood. Been watching a lot of the replays on Big Ten Network and the Fox College Sports Channel, so I am feeling it today. I'd certainly recommend if you have any of those channels, go ahead and watch some of those games. Great. It puts you in the mood, certainly. Can't wait till September now, even August with the start of fall camp. But anyway, on today's show, I'm going to cover the Pac-12. Of course, the big news with the Pac-12 this year is they've added Colorado and Utah to bring them up to 12 teams, and then they've split those teams into the Pac-12 North, the Pac-12 South. Makes perfect sense naming-wise and geographically, unlike what the Big Ten did. But that's, like I said, another story for another day. So let's get started with the usuals, in the sense of, if you want to get in touch with me, go ahead and shoot me an email. I'm at alj7279@yahoo.com. Send me whatever type of feedback you have, whether it's questions, it's comments, it's pointing out some things I've glossed over or things you want to hear more about. Send it all over. Great to hear from everybody. Second thing you could do is you can head on over to my blog. It's College Football Weekly Podcast. .blogspot.com. Kind of a compendium to go along with the podcast, in the sense I write some things on there kind of going over what I talked about on the show. Comments are open. You don't have to be logged in. You don't have to be a member of anything. Just send a comment. Again, same sort of thing. Whether it's good, whether it's bad, whatever the case may be, send it over. Any type of feedback is good feedback as far as I'm concerned. So, without any further ado, let's head right into the Pac-12, which is going to be a phenomenally exciting season this year. Of course, you have certainly two teams that could compete for not only a BCS game, but potentially a little bit more than that in the likes of Oregon and Stanford. USC, of course, is still on suspension. They could play in the Pac-12 title game. However, they can't go to a bowl game this year. So I think what I'll do is we'll start with the Pac-12 North, and then we're going to move to the Pac-12 South. So I'll give you my overview here of the North, teams 1 through 6, where I think they're going to finish. I think we're going to have a repeat this year of a Pac-12 champion. I think the Oregon Ducks are going to take home the Pac-12 North. I think Stanford will come in second, followed by Washington, the Oregon State Beavers, California, and then Washington State closing out that conference. So let's go ahead and take a look at what the Oregon Ducks are going to look like this season. Of course, Oregon went 12-1 a season ago, 9-0 in the conference. Only loss was to Auburn in the national title game, 22-19, which I thought was a pretty decent game. I think got off to a slow start. It was maybe a little sluggish. A lot of people were really kind of anticipating that, you know, potentially like a 56-42 type game or something like that. But I think the field conditions played into that sloppy play a little bit. But I think overall, I think Auburn was the better of the two teams. Certainly it was the team that I thought was going to win the game. I thought that defensive line was too much for Oregon to handle, and that's the way it proved out. It got exciting towards the end, but anyway, with the Ducks this year, you know, they do return 13 starters, but all you really have to look at is the offense with this team. Of course, they finished number one in total offense in the Pac, well, what was 10 last year. From this point forward, I'll just call it the Pac-12, even if I'm talking about Pac-10 numbers. And I don't expect Oregon to be any different this year in terms of, all you need to know is this. They bring back Darren Thomas. They bring back LaMichael James. They bring back Kenyon Barner. Really enough said. I think they do lose, what are we talking, two of their offensive linemen. They lose a handful of wide receivers. I think Chip Kelly has this team to the point where they're just now going to start to reload with this team. It's an exciting brand of football. Eugene, Oregon, it's a beautiful place. Alton Stadium is phenomenal, incredibly loud, a great place to play. And, of course, who wouldn't want to play for basically what's a Nike factory? I mean, you have potentially the nicest accommodations of any team in the country with Phil Knight's money down there. you know, of course, a million different uniforms, all of these luxuries that kind of go on. You're almost treated like a professional at that school, in a sense of obviously you're not paid or anything like that, but the amenities are top notch. I mean, there are probably NFL teams that don't get treated quite as well as the Oregon Ducks do. But so I think that with what they have coming back, how established this team is now, Chip Kelly is, you know, seems to be a coach that a lot of these top talent guys want to play for. Like I said, of course, especially with that brand of football that they play, they're going to bring in athlete after athlete after athlete, and I think that he has this program up and running. You go back to the Harrington years and that sort of thing under Bilotti, and you know, they were good. Oregon's always had, you know, since probably mid-90s up until now, solid football teams. I think that the last couple years under Bilotti and now the first couple under Chip Kelly has taken them to that next level. And I think that's where they're going to stay for, you know, who knows? We'll see. I never thought USC would have fallen like they have. Of course, they had the off-the-field issues. That's the other thing that the Ducks have to deal with this year, with that whole recruiting snafu where they paid the guy in Texas, what was it, $25,000 or something for recruiting services, and the NCAA is looking into that a little bit. On defense, I think with how good their offense was last year, the defense got overlooked. And what a lot of people don't realize, I know I certainly didn't, until I looked at the final rankings, they finished fourth in the conference in total defense last year, which of course is no small feat considering you have the likes of Andrew Luck and USC with Matt Barkley and an Arizona State team that could score quite a bit and had a good season last year. Arizona, I mean, Washington, there's talent in this conference. There's offensive talent in this conference. So the fact that they were able to finish fourth in the conference in defense was pretty surprising. Of course, they gave up quite a bit of points. I mean, they ended up giving up 18 points a game on average at the end, but they had shutouts against New Mexico and Portland State, so that helped. You know, they shut down Tennessee pretty much as well at 13 points. UCLA only scored 13. Cal only scored 13, so their defense was able to hold some people down, kind of that bend don't break mentality. And then considering how much they're on the field with how fast Oregon's tempo was, it was just out of this world. I thought that was a pretty impressive feat for them. Of course, Cliff Harris, their all-world cornerback, got into some troubles off the field, and he's not going to be with the team this year. So that's going to hurt Oregon a little bit. I don't think it's going to derail their season. When you look at their schedule, of course, a couple biggies jump to mind. First is their first game of the season. It's in Arlington, Texas, against LSU, who's going to be another top 5, maybe top 10 ranked team to start the season. So that is going to be a showdown. I think what helps the Ducks there is it's early enough in the season to where, obviously, if they win the game, they set themselves up a great position to go back to a BCS title game. If they lose that game, being the first game of the season, if they can go through and run the rest of that schedule, and especially win that November 12th showdown at Stanford, that even with one loss, they may have a chance to get on that BCS title game. I think one of these shows coming up, I'll have kind of a national title contender type preview show. But I think Oregon with one loss would certainly be looked favorably upon against anybody from the ACC or the Big East, for sure. I think there are a few teams ahead of them that may have the possibility of finishing undefeated this year. So obviously every game is a big game, none bigger than that opener against LSU and then that November 12th game at Stanford. The rest of their schedule, they'll host Nevada and Missouri State. Of course, no issues there. Nevada's a good team, obviously. I don't think that they're going to be able to compete with an Oregon. They're at Arizona, then they host Cal, Arizona State, at Colorado, Washington State at home. Then they go to Washington, to Stanford, that tough game on November 12th. USC at home, Oregon State at home to close it out, the Civil War. I don't see more than probably two teams on the schedule that could beat this Ducks team. Obviously, LSU, I think, is going to be tough for them. At Stanford, I think, is going to be very tough for them, although we'll get to Stanford next. I don't think they're going to be quite what they were last year. They do have Andrew Luck, so You know, anything can happen with there. At Washington, could be tough. I think the Huskies are going to be a little bit better this year. You know, they had a pretty good year last year. They won that bowl game. I think they're on the upswing. I don't think they're in any position currently to really challenge Oregon. USC, always a tough game. USC, even with all the sanctions they're facing, is still a great team. But I think Oregon has enough to handle them. So I see Oregon finishing probably anywhere from 12-1 to 13-0 to maybe running the table again this season, and winning that Pac-12 inaugural championship game. And I have them, if we go back to my top 25 show, as my favorite to not only get to the national title game, but I think that this team has enough this year to maybe win that national title game, kind of make that next step. So we'll see. I really like where Oregon's positioned. Next in line, I have the Stanford Cardinal. Of course, 12-1 a year ago. Their only loss was at Oregon, which when you look at the score, 52-31, looks like they got blown out. Of course, Stanford had that huge lead to begin before Oregon really kind of hit the gas pedal and rolled away from them. At the end of the season, I mean, they blew out Virginia Tech in the Orange Bowl. And Virginia Tech was playing well at that point, too, don't forget. But Stanford may have been, other than maybe Alabama, playing probably as well as anybody down the stretch, and certainly had one of the most impressive bowl games of anybody out there. So Stanford this year, they do return 10 starters. Of course, the only one that you really have to look at is Andrew Luck. They're, you know, again, all-world quarterback by everybody's, you know, take on him. Certainly would have been the number one pick last year. Certainly going to be the number one pick this next year. Kind of a shock that he came back. They do lose Jim Harbaugh. Of course, he's gone. He went and took the job in the NFL. David Shaw is going to be their coach this year. He was their offensive coordinator under Harbaugh. So there's not going to be any real changes in terms of how this team operates, which I think is going to help Stanford quite a bit. They finished number two in offense last year, of course, behind the high-flying Oregon Ducks. They also finished number two defensively. So the reason why I think Stanford takes a little bit of a step back this year and isn't quite as magical as they were a season ago, even with Andrew Luck, is I think the defense is going to take a significant step backward. Significant in the sense, I don't see them finishing number two in the conference in total defense, but maybe middle of the pack, maybe five or six. They do lose, I mean, quite a bit of talent from defense. The schedule plays out really well for Stanford. Of course, what I see as their toughest game is Oregon, and they do get them at home, which is going to help quite a bit. They then close the season with Notre Dame at home as well. That's another team that I see could beat Stanford on the schedule. I think Washington, again, is going to be tough, but they also have that at home, which I really like. So the schedule sets up pretty nice for Stanford to have, obviously, another good season. The talent is there to have another good season. I think the talent is down just enough to where, I guess what I think is Stanford, in my eyes, may be overachieved. They had kind of all the right pieces in the right places at the right times and that sort of thing, and that's what really produced that magical run last year. I don't see quite that much magic. I do see them being very, very good and certainly BCS worthy come the end of the season. I just don't know that they're going to be quite to the level of where they were last year, in the sense they'll probably finish right around that 10-win mark. I don't know that they'll get to a BCS game. If it weren't for Oregon, this team would certainly be my Pac-12 favorite to win the whole thing. I just think Oregon is still a little bit better than Stanford this year. I could be completely wrong. Like I said, with Andrew Luck there, you never know what type of magic he's going to be able to produce. So it's kind of with that guy there, I don't think it would matter what you throw on the field. He's going to keep them in most of their games. So we'll see what he does. And like I said, their toughest games are going to be at home this year. So that's good for them. They do travel to USC. They do travel to Oregon State, who I think is going to be a decent little team. But most of their games are winnable on the schedule, with the exception of a couple. In third in the Pac-12 North, I have the Washington Huskies. 7-6 a year ago, they went on to beat Nebraska in the bowl game, of course, which was strange because they got blown out by Nebraska the third game of the season at home. They then beat Nebraska on a neutral field. Nebraska at that point had kind of, the wheels had kind of come off on them down the stretch last year. This year, of course, with Washington, they do have to replace. There's no more Jake Locker there. But they do have Keith Price, the sophomore, who's a very talented quarterback by all accounts. They also have Nick Montana, the freshman there, of course, the son of Joe Montana, who is considered to be a very sought-after recruit. But by all accounts, Price is going to be the starter. Of course, the Huskies do return 10 players from last year's team that finished sixth in both total offense and total defense. I see some improvement there. I think that Sarkisian definitely has Washington headed in the right direction to really get back to where this team is historically in terms of one of the best in the Pac-12, and I think that they're probably just a couple years away from making that next sort of leap to where they'll be able to compete for Pac-12 championships year in and year out. It's just not going to be this year. Well, I see them as probably a clear number three in this division. They're certainly nowhere near where Stanford and Oregon is, which is why I have them slotted third. I think a return to a bowl game, potentially another bowl win, is certainly in the future for this team. Like I said, the excitement is there. You know, Sarkisian is, you know, of course, a disciple of Pete Carroll in the USC years and ran the offense down there. He's certainly building this program back up from where they were when Ty Willingham left. If you remember, what was it, 1990? Did Washington win a share of the national title? Maybe even more recent than that. But they're traditionally a very, very strong team. They've played in a lot of Rose Bowls. Seattle, even though you have the Seahawks there, is a hotbed for the Huskies. They love their Huskies. They pack Husky Stadium, 72,000 strong. Schedule-wise, a lot of winnable games on the schedule for this Washington team. Eastern Michigan and Hawaii at home, those should be winnable. At Nebraska is going to be very, very tough for this team, although they beat them. They went 1-1 against them last year, beat them in the bowl game. I think Nebraska might have the edge on Washington this year. They'll then have Cal at home, at Utah, Colorado at home, at Stanford, Arizona and Oregon at home, at USC, at Oregon State, and then Washington State at home to end it. So looking at that schedule, I think your Nebraskas, certainly your Stanford, your Oregon, are going to be teams that I don't think Washington can beat. There are a few others where they'll be tough. You know, at Utah, certainly going to be tough. At Oregon State is going to be tough. At USC is going to be tough. So there's a handful of games that are losable, I think, for this team. But somewhere around that 7 or 8 win mark, I think, is more than likely for the Huskies. Like I said, certainly going to get back to a bowl game. But just a couple years away from truly competing with the likes of Oregon. And we'll see, of course, what happens with Stanford in terms of once Andrew Luck is gone and, of course, Harbaugh's gone this year. Can David Shaw kind of keep Stanford where they're at, or does Washington, which is what I see happening, I think I see Washington eventually slotting into that number two spot in the Pac-12 North to kind of challenge with Oregon. And that's where I see the future of the Pac-12 North going, with Oregon and Washington kind of dominating and taking turns in terms of who's going to play for that Pac-12 championship. In fourth place in the North, I have the Oregon State Beavers. Of course, disappointing for Oregon State last year, 5-7 on the season. They had high hopes in terms of certainly not competing for a Pac-12 championship a season ago, but for finishing, you know, certainly top 20, top 15, somewhere around there, certainly getting to a bowl game. So definitely was a down year for the Beavers. But Mike Riley is probably... I see Riley as one of the best coaches in the Pac-12 in the sense that I think he does more with less than anybody, certainly in that conference and potentially countrywide. I mean, Corvallis, Oregon isn't the easiest place in the world to recruit to. I should know. I lived in Corvallis for a few years of my life right after college. beautiful town. The stadium is, you know, really, really nice for a Pac-12 stadium, a little bit smaller than what you find here in Big Ten country. But in terms of, you're about 45 minutes north of Eugene, and that's the team that everybody loves in the state. Well, maybe not everybody, but that's certainly the team that has the Nike money, that has kind of the glitz and glamour to it. So the fact that Mike Riley has been able to build a winner there has been phenomenal. Of course, Dennis Erickson helped a little bit back in 2000-2001 winning that Fiesta Bowl. But I think the Beavers certainly take a step, you know, back to where they should have been a year ago in terms of back into a bowl game, you know, potentially win a bowl game. You have 10 starters coming back for the Beavers this year, 7 of them on offense. So I think their offense, despite losing Jacquizz Rodgers, should certainly be quite a bit better than they were last year. They finished 9th in the conference last year in offense. I think they're going to be significant improvement there. You do have Ryan Katz coming back, a quarterback who's a really, really solid quarterback. He's kind of a dark horse in the Pac-12. Keep an eye on this Ryan Katz kid. He's got a super strong arm. And Oregon State, over the years, has pumped out these quarterbacks that not a lot of people hear of coming out of college, but then make a pretty big splash. I mean, think back to Derek Anderson, Matt Moore. I think Ryan Katz is going to be the next of that with the incredibly powerful arm that's going to come out of college, and not many people are going to hear about him, and then he's going to make a splash somewhere in the NFL. Of course, James Rodgers comes back, the older brother of Jacquizz Rodgers, who did leave for the NFL. But James is back. He had that really brutal knee injury last year, which cost him the season. Joe Haluhuni, at tight end for Oregon State. He may be one of the best tight ends in the conference. They do return 4 offensive linemen. You know, Marcus Wheaton, receiver that a lot of people are comparing to, you know, in terms of total yardage, like, you know, that next sort of do-it-all, you know, return kicks, return punts, being able to run, you know, like some jet sweeps, that sort of thing. So offensively, this team should be pretty well stacked, should put up a lot of numbers, certainly better than 9th in the conference, that's for sure. Where they're going to have some issues is going to be on defense. They finished 8th in the conference a year ago. They only returned 3 starters from that team. Of course, the stud is Stephen Paya, who left. Paya, the beast, the machine, who benched 225, what was it, 48 times or something, ended up breaking the NFL combine record, which is pretty neat to see. But the other thing that Oregon State has to deal with this year, other than a defense that may be a little bit down, is a pretty brutal schedule, in the sense that they open against Sacramento State, which shouldn't be an issue for Oregon State. They then, however, travel to Wisconsin, which, I mean, Oregon State could play one of their better games of the year, and I think they're still going to be outmatched against the Badgers. So I don't see them winning that, especially at Camp Randall. They'll then host UCLA, which is winnable. At Arizona State, it's going to be very, very tough. Arizona State is certainly going to compete for the Pac-12 South. They'll then host Arizona, who I think is winnable. They'll host BYU. They'll host Washington State. They'll go to Utah. They'll then host Stanford, California, and Washington before they travel to Oregon. So you look here, I mean, certainly I don't think they can beat a Stanford in Oregon or a Wisconsin. And they'll, you know, there are other tough games, a couple on the road. I think Arizona State's going to be very, very tough for them to win. I think even at Utah is going to be very, very tough for them. So Oregon State, I see them certainly improving upon the 5 wins from a season ago. I think getting back to a bowl game, but not really challenging. Maybe challenging a Washington for number 3, but certainly a few notches below what Oregon and Stanford are going to put on the field this season. Next, I have the Cal Bears in 5th in the Pac-12 North. Cal 5-7 a season ago, and I see them probably finishing right around that mark again this year. Couple interesting things about Cal this year. They do return 11 starters, 5 on defense, and the defense finished number 1 last year in the Pac-12 in terms of total defense. And they've had some really strong recruiting classes, at least defensively, over the years, and they've got a lot of talent on this defense. So even though they're returning 5 starters, certainly look for this defense to be near the top, if not at the top, again in the Pac-12. Offensively is where the team is going to struggle. 6 starters coming back. The interesting part is going to be what they're going to do at the quarterback position. Interesting little note here. This is going to be the first time since 2005 that Jeff Tedford enters camp without a returning starter at quarterback or tailback. So a lot of questions to answer there. They do return their receivers. They do return 3 of their 5 offensive linemen. So outside of quarterback and running back, there's a little bit of experience there. But of course, what are potentially, you know, the most important and maybe third most important, quarterback and tailback. So I think that experience on offense is going to end up hurting Cal. Defensively, I think the defense will keep them in some games. And if the offense, you know, really starts to kind of come together, I could see Cal getting to maybe a 6-win season. I just think the Pac-12 North is a little too tough for them this season, in the sense that I certainly don't see them competing with Oregon or Stanford, and I don't even think they can get past a Washington or an Oregon State. So it's going to be a long season for Cal this year, probably right around, like I said, that 5-win mark. Looking at the schedule, they open with Fresno State at home. They'll travel to Colorado to open Pac-12 play. They'll host Presbyterian. They'll then travel to Washington and to Oregon, and then host USC and Utah. So that is a really tough 4-week stretch for this team. I don't even know if I see them squeaking out of there with a win. I think USC and Utah are, talent-wise, certainly ahead of them. So you could be looking at about a 1-4 to start the Pac-12 season, which is why I have them slotted down as much as I do. They then go to UCLA, which I think is a winnable game for them. They'll host Washington State, who I think they're better than. And then they'll close with Oregon State at home, and then 2 brutal road games at Stanford, at Arizona State. So I'm thinking probably 3 wins in conference for this team. The interesting part is, you know, a while back, Jeff Tedford was kind of the darling of the college coaches. He turned out all those quarterbacks. Of course, Aaron Rodgers springs to mind right away. And could have really gone to much better jobs than where Cal is. You know, when you consider Cal, before Tedford got there, was never really considered much of a football power. You know, Cal Berkeley is, of course, they're known for academics first and foremost, and outside of that, it's, you know, at this stage, Jason Kidd and Aaron Rodgers probably. So they typically have some competitive teams here and there, but what I'm hinting at is that Jeff Tedford certainly has the heat turned up on him a little bit this season, and I think they're gonna struggle. They're gonna not make a bowl game, and it's gonna be interesting to see what takes place down in Berkeley at the end of the season, in sense of, do they bring Tedford back? Like I said, they've got some decent talent coming in, especially on defense. Or does the school try to, you know, maybe think they're be better off going in a different direction? I think they'd be best off keeping Tedford, because I don't know who you bring in at that school that's going to be able to reach the level of success that he did. Rounding out the Pac-12 North, I have the Washington State Cougars. 2-10 a season ago. Really, really tough schedule. They did beat Oregon State at Oregon State, which was a really nice win for them. They do return 13 starters, 7 on offense, 6 on defense. They finished 8th overall in defense or in offense last year, 10th in defense. And I don't see them getting a whole lot better year over year, in the sense that I think about that one conference win is where you can slate them. Washington State is, I think they're talent-wise just well behind what everybody else has. And it's tough. I mean, you're in Pullman, Washington. You're literally out in the middle of nowhere in the state of Washington. Very, very tough to get players in there. You know, every decade or so, they seem to put together a pretty nice run. Of course, you go back to the Ryan Leaf years where they went to the Rose Bowl and almost knocked off Michigan. Certainly not anywhere near that this year. With the 13 players coming back, I see a little bit of improvement probably in those rankings, but certainly not in terms of overall record at the end of the season. Idaho State and UNLV, they open with at home. They'll then go to San Diego State, Colorado, and UCLA. I mean, those are all tough games for this team. They'll host Stanford and Oregon State, travel to Oregon and California, and then host Arizona State and Utah before they close at Washington with the Apple Cup. So looking there, I think certainly in Idaho State they could beat. You know, I think they could compete with the Colorado potentially. You know, maybe a UNLV. But this is a brutal schedule in the sense that everybody that's on that schedule, certainly talent-wise, outside of your Idaho State or maybe even Colorado or UNLV, is certainly far more talented than the Cougars are this year. So I think it's going to be a long, long season in Pullman. I can't see any more than 3 wins, and I think that's even being a little bit generous for this team. So we'll see. You know, Paul Wolf enters his 4th season. He's 5-32 record. But it's going to be tough for him to survive another, you know, 2 or 3 win season. So we may be looking at a couple openings, the head coaching ranks in the Pac-12 at the end of the season, which will be pretty interesting. But that wraps up the Pac-12 North. I think Oregon is your clear-cut favorite to take this division, although I really like Stanford. I think Oregon is significantly better than Stanford is this year. I think Oregon is even better than they were a year ago, which is a little bit scary to think about. So having said that, let's move to the Pac-12 South. Again, I'll run you through what I have 1 through 6, and then we'll head in and kind of break teams down individually a little bit. I'm going to take a flyer this year. I'm going to go against the grain. I think USC is going to win the Pac-12 South this year, followed by Arizona State, and then newcomer Utah at 3rd. Then I'll have Arizona at 4th. I'll have UCLA coming in 5th, and I'll have the other newcomer, Colorado Buffaloes, coming in 6th. So let's take a look at the USC Trojans and why I think they're going to meet up with the Oregon Ducks in the very first Pac-12 title game. So with USC, the reason I have them slotted number 1 is I think there's a lot to like on this team this year. Of course, they went 8-5 a year ago, didn't get to play in a bowl game because they're on suspension. They still won't be able to play in a bowl game this year. But offensively, it is one thing that I really, really like about this team. Of course, Matt Barkley is back at quarterback, talented. He's going to be in his junior season this year, 3rd year as a starter, and had a good year last year, threw for nearly 2,800 yards, 26 touchdowns. So he's going to be solid again. Robert Woods, the ultra-talented wide receiver who's going to be a sophomore this year, is back. And then they'll have Mark Tyler at running back, ran for 900 yards last year. And, you know, a guy that's really a lot of fun to watch who's going to be a sophomore this year, Dylan Baxter. I think the weak point of this offense is certainly going to be their offensive line. Although with their limited number of scholarships, they did kind of stock up on talent on the offensive line. They're all going to be young and inexperienced. So the thing to watch with USC offensively is going to be how quickly that offensive line sort of comes together. And, you know, being USC, they're not where they were, say, from about 2003 to 2008 when they had their magical run under Pete Carroll. So they're not churning out quite the talent that they had at that level, but they're still USC in the sense that they, you know, Lane Kiffin has done a masterful job. Love him or hate him, he's done a great job at USC considering the circumstances that he's in. And I think that continues this year. I think the offense is going to be just fine. Defense, they do return 8 starters. The problem is they finished 7th overall in the Pac-12 last year in defense, which was a real shock for a lot of people. Of course, Monty Kiffin, Lane's dad, runs the defense, and he's just a legendary NFL assistant. He's known for concocting these fantastic defenses. So it was a real shock that they gave up such you know, a huge amount of yardage last year. Over 400 yards per game they gave up last year, which is not very good at all. I think with the number of starters coming back, that they're certainly going to be better than their year or a year ago. It's going to be hard to be much worse than they were a season ago. So I see them improving a little bit on defense. How much they improve is really going to kind of make or break whether this is about an 8 or 9 win team or about a 10. I don't see them necessarily winning 11 games with the schedule they have in front of them. But I think they're going to have enough to get it done in the Pac-12 South and meet Oregon in that Pac-12 title game. The schedule, they're going to open with Minnesota at home. They'll then play Utah, second week of the season, a Pac-12 game. They'll then host Syracuse. So Utah, kind of like, and we'll get to Utah, I have them third. Very, very interesting, I think, it's going to be to see what Utah can do in this conference. USC will then travel to Arizona State, which is going to be a very, very tough game. They'll then host Arizona, travel to California, and travel to Notre Dame. They'll then host Stanford before they go on the road against Colorado. They'll host Washington on the road at Oregon and then UCLA at home. So I could see them certainly beating a Minnesota, beating a Syracuse, beating Arizona and Cal, beating Colorado, beating UCLA. So you're looking at about, I think, certainly around that 6-win mark for sure, with their swing games probably being a Utah, Washington, maybe even Arizona State, Notre Dame, that sort of thing. So I think this team could get up around that 8-9 win mark, somewhere around there. Of course, no chance to go to a bowl game this season. I think one thing that'll be interesting to watch, if they do go through and have a good season, make that Pac-12 title game, to see if they can kind of rally together and take the opportunity to knock Oregon out of a BCS title contention. But I think USC is probably, certainly what I would consider the favorite in this division, this half of the Pac-12. Certainly, again, not where they were years ago, but I think going to be a step above what they were last season. Coming in second, I'm going to have the Arizona State Sun Devils. A lot of press around this team in terms of a lot of people are kind of seeing Arizona State as a dark horse to have a really, really good season. Last year they finished 6-6, 4-5 in the conference, did not go to a bowl game. They do return 12 starters, and they finished 5th in the Pac-12 last year, both offensively and defensively. So how does a team that goes 6-6 that returns 12 starters all of a sudden jump to where they're going to be a favorite or one of the favorites to win the Pac-12 South? And I think the big reason is going to be how they lost those 6 games last year. So if you look at their losses to Wisconsin, Oregon, Oregon State, UCLA, and Stanford, so 5 of their 6 losses was by a combined 20 points. So they were all games that were winnable. And the talent is still there. Again, with 12 coming back, and they're a talented 12 that are coming back. A lot of people tend to look at this team, and that's where they're kind of getting, hey, you know what, 6-6 a year ago, had a chance to win probably, you know, potentially 9 or 10 games, and they're going to return the bulk of, you know, the talent from that team. They do lose their quarterback, but they bring back, you know, Cameron Marshall at running back. They bring back Mike Willie at receiver. Talented bunch of players. And Dennis Erickson has a track record of really being able to turn out some tremendous teams. Of course, his years in Miami, he had a great run at Oregon State when he was there. The interesting thing with Erickson this year is a lot of people kind of already have him on a little bit of a hot seat, in the sense of this is going to be a team that, with the high expectations on there, if he doesn't reach those expectations, we're talking about California and Washington State, throw Arizona State in there, in the sense that their coach is on the hot seat, and we'll kind of see what shakes out as the season goes along. Looking at the schedule, they open against UC Davis and then Missouri at home. They'll travel to Illinois. They'll host USC and Oregon State, travel to Utah and Oregon, host Colorado, travel to UCLA and Washington State, and then host Arizona and California. So when you look at that, I think UC Davis certainly is going to be a win. Missouri will be a tough game. At Illinois, I think, is one of those sneaky tough games for Arizona State. I see them potentially winning that game. Host USC, which is going to be a big one. Host Oregon State, a big one. At Utah, at Oregon, I don't think they can beat Oregon, certainly. Colorado at home, they should beat. At UCLA, they should win. At Washington State, they should win. So I think, you know, some of their road games are going to be winnable in the sense they should win at UCLA, they should win at Washington State. At Illinois is going to be kind of up in the air. At Utah will be up in the air. At Oregon, I don't think they can beat. So I see four of their five road games as being winnable, which I think starts to play into why a lot of people see Arizona State as being kind of that dark horse of the Pac-12 South. I think a lot of publications or a lot of shows that you'll, you know, watch or listen to, that sort of thing, is going to have Arizona State as a team to watch. I don't quite see them as to the level of USC, but I could be wrong. I've obviously been wrong before and will certainly be wrong on a lot of these predictions this year, but I like that team. I don't think they're quite where USC is. I certainly don't think they're where Stanford or an Oregon is currently. So, in third in the division, I have the newcomer, the Utah Utes. And this is the most intriguing team to me in the entire Pac-12, in the sense that we're going to finally get to see a BCS buster in one of the BCS conferences and get to see how they can handle the pressure of a BCS schedule week in and week out. Of course, Utah over the years has, you know, the occasion where they've played the BCS teams have done well, but you consider that they oftentimes had multiple weeks of lower level competition to really kind of run through those and stay focused on, you know, that BCS level of competition in the sense of, I want to see, I think they're talented for sure. I mean, they went 10-3 a year ago. They ended up getting to a bowl game where they got beat by Boise State, which is, you know, nothing to be ashamed of. Boise State was a great team last year. They're going to be great again this year. Utah does return 10 players. I think what's going to be toughest for them, again, is going to be this schedule. Or as Kyle Whittingham had said, their head coach, the bar has been raised this year in the sense that when we look at their schedule, Montana State at home, at USC, at BYU, Washington and Arizona State at home, at Pittsburgh, at California, Oregon State at home, at Arizona, UCLA at home, at Washington State, Colorado at home, certainly winnable games on there. Montana State, they should win. You know, certainly UCLA, Washington State, Colorado, Arizona. I think they're better than Arizona. So I see what I would certainly say definitely going to go to a bowl game. I mean, Utah is really, really good. Jordan Wynn coming back, a quarterback, threw for 2,300 yards last season. A little bit of an experience at the running back. Defense, pretty solid defense comes back, but it's hard to translate where they were, you know, versus facing that lower competition now versus going to the Pac-12. So I think when it's all said and done, although I really like Utah, and certainly the story of Utah has been great over the years, but I think they get a little bit of a dose of reality in the sense that, you know, third in the Pac-12 South is going to be a great finish. You know, it's going to be a success story for a non-BCS school to finish ahead of some other Pac-12 teams. But I think that constant grind, that week in and week out and tough game followed by tough game followed by tough game is going to be too much for this team to overcome. Like I said, certainly I see them going to a bowl game. I don't see them competing with USC or Arizona State. I mean, maybe getting up to second, but I can't see this team winning the Pac-12 South, certainly, no matter what happens. I think that, like I said, I hate to harp on it and come back to it, but it's going to be interesting, but I just think that constant, you know, week in and week out is going to be a little bit too much for them currently, but it's certainly going to be a fun thing to watch, that's for sure. Coming in fourth in the Pac-12 South, I have the Arizona Wildcats. 7-6 a year ago. Went to a bowl game, got beat by Oklahoma State in that bowl game. Now, they do return, well, what's going to be 8 starters now. I just read on ESPN that their All-American wide receiver, Jerron Kreiner, is leaving school for the season. So that is a huge, huge, shock for Arizona and their fans. I think that that's going to be tough for them to overcome. I like Nick Foles at quarterback, and certainly if Kreiner were there, I would have said Kreiner is, if not the best, potentially one of the best receivers in the Pac-12. But with him gone now, that's going to hurt them quite a bit. They're going to have to break an entire new offensive line, and they don't return a single offensive lineman. Defensively, 5 starters back, and they finished 3rd in the conference last year in overall defense. Of course, Mike Stoops, like his brothers, known as a defensive guru. So I think defensively, the Arizona is going to be pretty solid again this season. But with nobody returning on the offensive line, with losing Kreiner, with the schedule that they have, the teams ahead of them in this conference, or in this division, especially with Arizona State, USC, and Utah, I think that's going to be too much to overcome. I do think that even with losing Kreiner, that they are still a step ahead of UCLA and certainly Colorado. But I can't see this team winning more than 5 or 6 games. I mean, being close to a bowl game, but probably just out of it. The schedule is tough. Northern Arizona, they open up with. That should be a victory. But then they go to Oklahoma State. Can't see them winning that. They'll host Stanford. Can't see them winning that. They'll host Oregon. Can't see them winning that. They go to USC. Very, very tough. I don't think they can win that. They go to Oregon State. Again, very, very tough. I don't think they win that. So I see them starting at 1-5, probably. The schedule does loosen up a little bit after that for them, in the sense they'll host UCLA, which is a winnable game. They'll go to Washington, which will be very, very tough. They'll host Utah, which, again, will be tough. Then they'll close at Colorado, at Arizona State, and then at home against Louisiana Lafayette. So I don't know. I think a bowl game would be a huge success for Arizona this season. I don't really see that coming to fruition, though, especially with Kreiner leaving school. I think that's going to shake this team up a little bit. And there's too much inexperience, even though they have Foles back. There's too much inexperience offensively there for them to really compete in the Pac-12 South and for them to really compete against that schedule, which is very, very tough. I mean, very top-heavy, certainly. Again, defensively, I see them being tough. It's going to be on offense that this team is going to struggle, certainly. 5th in the Pac-12 South, I'm going to have the UCLA Bruins, and this is going to be another team where their coach is going to be on a very, very hot seat in terms of Rick Neuheisel. This is the 4th year of Neuheisel. And, of course, when he came in, the one thing he touted was that they were going to take over the town of Los Angeles and they were going to get back to, you know, kind of their glory days of, if you remember, like J.J. Stokes and making some Rose Bowls and that sort of thing. And that has not come to fruition. In fact, you can make the case that the team has gotten worse since he's been there. So I think barring a out-of-nowhere solid season by UCLA, that Neuheisel is going to probably be looking for a job at the end of this season. They do return 13 starters from their team a year ago, where they went 4-8 overall, 2-7 only in conference. Things that I like, the running back, Jonathan Franklin, I think is very, very talented. He ran for just over 1,100 yards and 8 touchdowns last year, so he had a very, very solid season. He's going to be solid, certainly. You do only return 2 offensive linemen, but with that pistol offense that Neuheisel likes to run, I think rushing is certainly not going to be much of an issue for this team. I think it's going to be the rest of the offense, the passing game, and certainly the defense that's going to hurt this team the most. They finished 10th overall in the conference a year ago, which of course was dead last. They finished 9th overall in defense. I don't see them improving either of those numbers a whole lot. You do have Kevin Prince, who's expected to take over as the starter this year. You know, Prince, of course, was sidelined most of the season last year. He was going to be the starter. Hurt his knee a season ago. Played a little bit in the spring and should be ready to go by all accounts once the season starts rolling. So he'll be there, of course, with Franklin. They do return Nelson Rosario, Talon Embry at wide receiver, who are both pretty solid. But they only averaged 140 yards passing a game a year ago, which ranked 116th in the nation. So that's what I'm saying. Unless there's a drastic turnaround for this team, both offensively and defensively, which I just don't see, especially with the talent in this conference, I think UCLA is going to slog through another difficult season. They open at Houston. Then they'll host San Jose State in Texas. They'll travel to Oregon State and Stanford. They'll host Washington State at Arizona. They'll then host Cal and Arizona State before they travel to Utah, host Colorado, and then travel to USC. So when I look at this schedule, I think they can beat a Houston. I think they can beat a San Jose State. They may be able to beat a Colorado. They may be able to beat a Washington State. But I don't see any other winnable games for this team outside of that. I think Texas, you know, they beat Texas a year ago, but I think Texas beats them. Certainly Stanford beats them. Arizona State, Utah, USC. It's going to be a tough year for UCLA, and I think Neuheisel is going to have an absolute miracle down there in order to save his job. Bringing up the rear in the Pac-12 South, I have the other newcomer in terms of the Colorado Buffaloes. The Buffaloes, of course, they returned 14 starters from a year ago. They went 5-7 in the Big 12 last year, 2-6 in the Big 12 North. I think that there's, you know, certainly in Boulder, there's some excitement around this team. And the reason for that is the 14 starters that are coming back. But it's largely the same team in the sense that went 5-7 a year ago. And usually returning that number of starters, you think like, okay, you know what, they're going to be a little bit better this year. Certainly that's just what happens as players get a little bit older, a little bit more experience around them. They do, however, have a pretty brutal schedule in the sense that they have 13 games on the schedule this year. They don't have a single bye, and 11 of those games are against teams from BCS conferences. So that's why I have Colorado slated where they do. It's not certainly for their lack of talent. You know, although I don't think that they're maybe around the same level as a UCLA, but certainly not anywhere near, you know, just in their division. USC, Arizona State, Utah, I think, are all quite a bit better than them. I think most of the teams in the Pac-12 North are better than them talent-wise. But this schedule, when you look at this, at Hawaii, California at home, Colorado State at home, at Ohio State, Washington State at home, at Stanford, at Washington, Oregon at home, at Arizona State, USC and Arizona at home, and then at UCLA and at Utah. It's a brutal schedule in the sense that, you know, there's some winnable games on there for them, undoubtedly. You know, Washington State jumps to mind. You know, potentially compete with in Arizona, although I think Arizona's a little bit better than them. But when you look at this, you know, offensively is where this team, now granted, this is coming, these are numbers out of the Big 12 last year, so it's kind of hard to compare. They did finish 10th in the Big 12 in offense last year, but in that conference where it's offense heavy, you know, it's hard to compare that to the Pac-12 defensively as well. They finished sixth in the Big 12 in defense, but it was giving up 400 yards a game. So although they were sixth in the Big 12 in total defense, they were 83rd in the country. So 400 yards a game isn't going to fly in the Pac-12. So that's kind of where I have Colorado where they are. I think that although they have Tyler Hansen back at quarterback, who's, you know, he played a little bit last year, didn't have, you know, tremendous yards. Rodney Stewart at running back is very good. I like him. 1,300 yards a year ago in the Big 12 with 10 touchdowns. I think with Colorado more than Utah coming over here, the Big 12 I don't think translates exceptionally well into the Pac-12 in the sense that defenses are a lot stiffer in the Pac-12, and you still do have a few of those high-flying offenses, certainly in Oregon and Stanford this season. So that's why I have Colorado kind of sitting where they are. I think they're going to be a few years away. Colorado certainly is going to get back to where they're going. John Embry takes over, first season as head coach for them. He's a Colorado alum, so Colorado fans really, really like that. I just think the new conference, a tougher schedule, no buys. It's going to be really, really tough for this Colorado team to get anywhere near sniffing a bowl game this season. So, you know, maybe around that four-win mark, I could see them some winnable games in the Pac-12. But I think they're probably a few years away from moving up to kind of middle of the pack in that Pac-12 South Division. And I think they're quite a bit further away from that to getting back to their kind of mid-90s glory years with Rashawn Salaam and the likes of that, you know, even the Cordell Stewarts and that sort of thing. So that's going to wrap it up for the Pac-12. Again, I will have Oregon versus USC in that Pac-12 title game. And the way the Pac-12 is going to do it this year is, unlike all the other conferences, which will have a neutral site, the Pac-12 is going to have the Pac-12 title game at the university that has the best overall conference record. Meaning, I think Oregon probably goes undefeated in the Pac-12 this year, which means they're going to host the Pac-12 title game, which of course is a huge, you know, advantage for that team. I don't know. I don't think I like that too much. Of course, the flip side there is kind of where the population bases are on the Pac-12. The only real sites you could hold a game would be a Seattle, Los Angeles, or you know, a Phoenix, which of course would be a virtual home game for at least one of the teams that are going to be in that Pac-12 title game. So I don't know that there was really a better way to do it. Of course, at the Big Ten, they chose Indianapolis, which is a central hub pretty much for the Big Ten. You know, your SEC that will have it, your ACC, which rotates it, SEC, which has, you know, which tends to rotate it, that sort of thing. It'll be interesting, to say the least. But I think the Pac-12 North is certainly the stronger of the two divisions this year. I think Oregon and Stanford are your, what I would say clearly, probably your two best teams in the conference, and of course they're in the Pac-12 North together, so that's going to leave Stanford out in the cold in terms of a chance to a real legitimate chance to get to a BCS game this year again. So it's possible with Andrew Luck, but I think Oregon is just too strong for anybody in this conference to take down. So I see them kind of walking through this schedule and getting back to a big-time BCS game. Like I said, my prediction at the beginning of the season was Oregon heads to the BCS title game. So we'll see how that plays out. Regardless, Pac-12 is always an interesting conference. You know, of course, depending which time zone you live in, it's always kind of nice to have those mid-afternoon games. Here in the Midwest, at least, you know, once they start at 11 or 1 o'clock out there, it's already 1 or 3 o'clock here. So it makes for a nice flow of college football. You know, the Pac-12 is relevant again this year. Oregon and Stanford certainly helped that. USC had been relevant before that. So it's going to be an interesting season, that's for sure. Next week, we have one BCS conference to go. It's going to be the SEC. We're going to break that down. Of course, kind of the, you know, did it alphabetically, but it's also kind of saving the best for last in the sense that that conference is loaded again this year. I think all your talent is going to be with your Alabama and your LSU this year. I think you have Georgia on the other side. That should be pretty tough. So that's a little bit of a preview of what's coming ahead in the SEC. After that, I think what I'll do is I'll devote a show to cover kind of your non-BCS. I'm not going to go through and really break down the MAC and the Conference USA and that sort of thing, so I apologize in advance if I upset fans of those conferences by not devoting an entire show to them. But I think what I'll do is I'll run through some of the non-BCS conferences and some of the teams that really stand out in terms of certainly your Boise State, which is going to be solid this year, TCU, you know, Notre Dame, the Independent. I'll bring them into the show. I think that they're going to be a very, very solid team this year. Even some of the service academies, you know, are going to have some pretty solid seasons this year. So that is what's on tap for the coming shows. Again, I thank every single one of you for listening. The support, the following has been tremendous. I couldn't have imagined anything better. My wildest dreams, I couldn't have imagined how successful that this show has been so far. So I plan on keeping that going. You know, again, once I think I'm done with the conferences, I'll probably put together a show to kind of really in-depth dissect what I would consider probably anywhere from your, you know, maybe stretch it out to even your 5 or 10 teams that I really see for competing for top flight bowl games, even potential BCS title, really deep dive their schedule, their rosters, that sort of thing, things to look for. So having said that, again, if you want to get in touch with me, you can reach me. I'm at ALJ7279@yahoo.com. Send me whatever type of mail you want to send me. Like I said, if it's suggestions on ways to do the show better, topics you want discussed, players or teams you want discussed, you know, issues that you take with what I've said, mistakes I've made, which I'm sure there's a ton, anything like that, send that over. Again, ALJ7279@yahoo.com. Or you can head on over to the blog that I have that goes along with the podcast. That's collegefootballweeklypodcast.blogspot.com. Again, I tend to do little write-ups in there on occasion, kind of covering what I've covered in the podcast. You can leave comments. It's an open comment forum, so just leave a comment. You don't have to be logged in, anything like that. So having said that, hope you enjoyed your 4th of July weekend, and we are a month away from fall practice beginning for these teams. So until then, I will see you next time.